How important were ministers to the creation of the United States of America? Let's find out as we talk with Reverend Bill Cook, who is the founder of something called America's Black Robe Regiment. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. And Bill, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Jerry. It's great to be with you today.
Sure, absolutely. So tell us about ministers and the founding of the nation. Did they play a significant role?
They played a huge role. In fact, shots heard around the world was fired on the lawn of Jonas Clark's church. And he was considered more dangerous than all the military stores in Concord or in the colony. And it so infected the minds of the people with his calm and deep indignation that when British regulars came marching up the old turnpike on the gray dawn of April 1775, they found all the farmers converted to a doctrine of liberty that armed and sustained a young nation for 7 years of war. So that was Jonas Clark. And when the Battle of Lexington unfolded, Clark was there. He went out to meet the troops, the Patriots. It I think, was 1 in the morning. And Paul Revere even stopped at Jonas Clark's home the night before the Battle of Lexington to let him know that the British were on their way. And when he basically told Clark, who had two founding fathers staying with him that night, John Hancock and Sam Adams, one of the two men turned to the pastor and said, "Sir, will your people fight?" And the pastor responded, "I have prepared them for this very hour." Now, Clark was a very significant figure in the starting of the revolution. So there are other pastors who played a very significant role, like Peter Muhlenberg. Have you ever heard of him?
I have, but go ahead and tell us the story.
Okay. Peter was a member of the Virginia House of Burgesses, so he didn't buy into the notion of separation of church and state. And George Washington had asked him to start a regiment. He did the build the 8th Virginia Regiment. So he came back to his church on a Sunday morning, January 21, 1776, and he preached a sermon out of Ecclesiastes chapter 8, verses 1 through 8. And he preached through the whole chapter, and when he got to the 8th verse, the final verse, he said in a voice, as the record says, that thundered, "There's a time for all things, a time to preach, and a time to pray, and a time to fight." He said, "That time has now come." He then shut the Bible, then came down from the pulpit, and he threw off his robe. He was already in full uniform as a Continental colonel, and he ordered drums to begin beating for recruits at the rear of the church. And when all was said and done, he'd recruited 300 men from the frontier of America at that time to form the 8th Virginia Regiment. He led them off to war and led them throughout the Revolution. He was a great military leader. And
in fact, if I could just jump in real fast, the filmmaker Mel Gibson actually had a scene in the movie The Patriot that was patterned after or based on that incident that you just described. And by the way, it's my understanding that the Reverend Peter John Gabriel Muhlenberg was not only with those men all those years, but he was there when the British finally surrendered in Yorktown.
Right.
You know, which was such a delightful thing to happen, you know, in 1781.
Yeah.
Now, I understand that Peter John Gabriel Muhlenberg, who grew up in a Lutheran home, had an older brother,
right,
Frederick Augustus Muhlenberg, who did not agree with the idea of Christian preachers getting involved in politics. Tell us about that story and the interaction between the two brothers.
The story was they began to send letters back and forth, where Friedrich, his name, as you say in German, was contending with Peter over a period of months. And that exchange of letters came to be known as the Battle of the Quills. And toward the end of the war, when Friedrich's church was burned down in New York by the British, he came around to Peter's way of thinking, and he decided he would run for Congress after the war was over. And Friedrich was elected to the first Congress. He became the Speaker of the House in the first Congress, a pastor. So there was no hint of belief in separation of church and state. You know, the Johnson Amendment never would have seen the light of day in revolutionary America. In fact, I've often said that if somebody had proposed something like the Johnson Amendment and it got any traction, we probably have entered into a second revolution, because the American people understood that John Peter Gabriel Muhlenberg, Jonas Clark, and other pastors have figured so prominently in the war for independence, there's no way that they would have gone to that. They knew that there were pastors that, who fought in the revolution, led troops in the revolution, and they never would have countenanced the idea of separation.
And I want to add, if I may, the Frederick Augustus Muhlenberg not only ran for Congress and was even the first Speaker of the House of Representatives in the history of America, okay, and yes, he is the one who signed for the House of Representatives the First Amendment, the Bill of Rights. So in other words, religious freedom, you know, it was there with his signature. And as you say, you know, here was a minister who reluctantly entered politics, but he did so because it was like, well, if he didn't speak out, you know, then not only was his church being destroyed by the British, but other, you know, other liberties were lost during that time.
You know, it's interesting when toward the end of the war, Peter Muhlenberg was a hero. People knew that he fought in the revolution. He became a general, and his flock, the people in his church, begged him to come back and be their pastor. And his response was, I can no longer build the house of God because I'm a bloody man. Like David told, you know, his next generation, he couldn't build the house of God, so he turned it over to Solomon. And so, Peter ran for Congress in the first Congress. He was elected to the first Congress as well. He eventually became a senator. But, you know, it's interesting when you look, when you consider this, the concept of separation of church and state in light of the fact there were at least two pastors in the first Congress, people that had preached liberty, that had contended for liberty, and they were involved in the revolution. So,
are there other members of the Black Robe Regiment that you want to highlight? And by the way, we should be very specific and clear here. There was no Black Robe Regiment. It was in the sense that, you know, oh, this, 14th Regiment from such and such a place. No. It was basically was kind of like a moniker that was a negative, derisive term by a British official against these ministers in America who were interfering, as they saw it, in American politics. But anyway, go ahead and highlight a couple of more examples.
Sure. The idea of the Black Robe Regiment, as you said, came from the British. It was a derisive reference to their black robes. And the British had particular animus toward the clergy because they knew the role that the pastors played. They were considered chief agitators of the rebellion. And so Joab Houghton, who was down in Hopewell, New Jersey, after the news of what had happened in Lexington reached Hopewell, New Jersey, which wasn't that far away, Houghton got up on the big stone block outside his church where women would mount their horses. And he said in a very loud voice, the British are murdering our brethren of New England. Who follows me to Boston? With that, he let off 50 men from his church to fight in the revolution. So that's another story, another great story. I'm just trying to pull up some of the other stories.
Any comments about, would you consider John Witherspoon, who was the president of Princeton, he was a Presbyterian minister, would you call him a member of the Black Robe Regiment? I mean, he was an extremely important founding father.
I think he was. I think the British would have considered him a part of the Black Robe Regiment. So
I can't remember which historian it was, but there was an historian who made a remark, something like, John Witherspoon was the most important teacher in the history of the United States of America. John Eidsmo, in his book Christianity and the Constitution, documents that Witherspoon at Princeton taught so many founding fathers and the future congressmen, and one of his most notable students of them all was James Madison, who was a key architect of the U.S. Constitution. So these ministers were very important to the American cause of liberty.
Yes, and they promoted the principles in the Declaration of Independence. They taught them for years, so that due to the preaching of that time, You know, one historian said that the revolution was an accomplished fact before the war started.
So we see historically, Reverend Cook, the experience of these clergymen getting involved in the revolutionary period. In many ways, they helped create this country, okay, and lead us to our freedoms. What do you want to say about today, and what would you like to see pastors do today in modern America?
Well, the pulpit is a very powerful place, more powerful than a lot of pastors realize. And we've been calling pastors to ignore the Johnson Amendment and do their, we believe that preaching the whole counsel of God is a sacred duty incumbent upon everyone.
Can you explain what the Johnson Amendment is? And I understand it's been abrogated now anyway.
Right, right. The Johnson Amendment became, it's what the 501c3 is based on in the tax code. And it's basically stating you pastors can't endorse specific candidates. They can't be partisan in their preaching. And we challenge that. I've challenged it from the beginning. So we have something called a Gideon's 300 pledge. And the reason it's called Gideon's 300 is because Gideon won against far greater numbers. And we are facing a foe in America that's trying to take us down and lead us into tyranny. So we need pastors to stand up and begin to preach the whole counsel of God as it relates to not just moral issues, but also on government. They're in a great place to do that. And so we believe liberty is sacred. It's a gift that God has given us and was bestowed by Jesus upon his church, the bride of Christ. And liberty is sacred, as Patrick Henry believed. And it's the church's sacred trust. We, as the church, we are entrusted with liberty. And if we don't secure it, if we don't do what is necessary as the church to secure it, we're turning it over to the children of disobedience. So there's two kinds of people in the world. If you have a biblical worldview, you believe that there are those who are born of God and those who are not. And the people that are not born of God are called the children of disobedience. And their behavior is governed by the prince of the power of the air. So it's no surprise when the church for so many years has been running away from involvement in government that we've seen tyranny rise in America.
Now let's make sure we're totally clear here. You're not in any way advocating any kind of violence or that kind of thing. Okay, good. I want you to clarify that. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we aren't advocating violence. We're just simply advocating that the church do its duty, its sacred obligation to secure liberty. We are the church. The church in America is responsible for securing liberty. It is our trust as a church, and we can't abdicate that role. So, otherwise we turn government over to someone called the children of disobedience. We know what they'll do with the country. It'll be destroyed. So the church has got to rise up and step up and take on the government. And we can make this available, this Gideon's 300 pledge. We've been asking pastors across America to sign it. You signed it, Jerry, when we were down in Williamsburg recently at a pastor's event. And it's a pretty radical statement. It's just a commitment to do the things that are necessary to keep liberty secure.
And Jesus called us to be salt and light in our society.
Right.
So pastors can help, aid in that whole process.
Right. If we are salt, we are the curators of our temporal domain, of our government.
All right, Bill, thank you so much for being with us. Bill Cook, his website is abrr.us. Thank you, Bill. All the best.
Thank you, Jerry. God bless you, too.
Okay, great. Thanks. Bye-bye.